The most famous name in the animal kingdom this week is Harambe. The 17-year-old gorilla was killed at the Cincinnati Zoo last Saturday after a little boy fell into his habitat. Harambe did not harm the child, but zoo officials decided to put him down after about 10 minutes. They say the gorilla may have ultimately decided to hurt the boy. Those who worked closely with gorillas at the zoo admit there's no way to predict the animal's behavior. But if you've seen anything about this incident on the internet, you'd think most of the world's population are expert primatologists. Everyone has an opinion on what Harambe did or would have done and how zookeepers handled the situation. We're going to talk about this in the break room a little later, but the fallout from Harambe's death reminds me of a recent conversation I had with an actual primatologist. Frans de Waal is the director of the Living Links Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center. He's also a professor of psychology at Emory University. His new book is called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? And I spoke with him last month about how we determine animals' intellect.
I have to admit, this book is fascinating. You almost can't put it down. And we can't go through everything point by point. But I wanted to start with this idea of this question of comparison. Because it looks as though we have, for a long time, judged animals' intellect based on whether they can accomplish things humans can. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we are very focused, of course, on language and reading and writing and technology. And we are very strong in that. And so we have tried to judge animals on those terms. And that works okay with, let's say, a chimpanzee who is very similar to us and has very similar skills. But there are species, you know, like, let's say, the octopus or the elephant or certain birds that are very smart but are very different from us and have a very different lifestyle. And why would we make that comparison? Is that really interesting to know, are you smarter than an octopus? Well, in your environment, with what you daily do, you are obviously very smart. But in the octopus's environment, who knows how you would be faring? We don't know.
So there's also a really fascinating section on testing of mice. And mice are such common lab animals. They were testing to see if mice could conceal the fact that they were in pain. How did that experiment work?
Well, there's several pain experiments. One on mice was on what we call empathy. So there's now increasingly studies on rodents and empathy. And the mouse study was to see if they exhibited pain and if that stimulated the pain sensitivity of other mice. So that was what they call pain contagion. And recently at Emory, we did a study on voles. Voles are also little rodents. And we did a neuroscience study on empathy and found that the neural circuitry, basically, the way empathy works in the rodent is exactly the same it works in the human. And so this is a very old system that you also have in your average dog. Your dog is empathic. Your dog responds to your emotions. And that's actually why we have dogs and cats in the house rather than snakes and lizards usually, because mammals have that capacity and we like that in them.
So then there was another point at which scientists threw a t-shirt that smelled of humans into the cage with the mice, and they were really afraid. And I wondered, does that mean that every experiment related to mice is in some way possibly flawed because there are humans present?
Well, what they found actually is that mice perform better with female experimenters than male experimenters. And that mice are apparently a little bit stressed if they smell that there's a man around. And that may be true for other animals as well. We know it now for mice. Who knows? It may be true for other animals. And so that means that if you have experimenters of two genders, you have to watch which gender is doing the testing. And so this all relates to methodology. We in science, of course, the scientists, we are very keen on good methodology, and we need to pay attention to that. But people don't always realize that these small details, because it seems like a small detail, matter a lot for the animals.
So, you know, there are tests in which we have thought we found intelligence in a non-human animal. And I'm thinking particularly of, there was one African gray parrot who became the first non-human animal to ask an existential question. And that question was, what color am I? Does a test like that and a finding like that actually reveal intelligence on the part of that gray parrot?
Well, Alex the parrot is definitely very intelligent. Alex the parrot can count up things even. So they can show Alex Well, Alex died a couple of years ago. Yeah. I'm sorry to say that. But they could show Alex a few small items, like little pieces of pasta, for example, and put a cup over them. So you show him three pieces, you put a cup over it. You show him two more pieces, you put a cup over it. And then you say, how many pieces? And he says five. So he cannot even look at the pieces anymore because they're covered. But he has remembers them and he can count them up. And this was a capacity that everyone said cannot be done with language, without language. And so that humans, there's always this thinking that humans solve all these problems with language. But actually, language is probably not nearly as important as we think in our thinking process. And Alex could do things that everyone had claimed, so categorization of things, like the existential question that you gave here. And he doesn't have language the way we have. Of course, he can label things, and that's why he can call out certain names and certain numbers. But he doesn't have language the way we do.
If you're just joining us, my guest is primatologist Frans de Waal. His new book is called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? Language becomes a big point in your book as well, because there are animals who have learned to maybe mimic human sounds. Maybe they're not actually understanding language the way at least human language. I'm thinking of a gorilla learning sign language, for example, and how we compare that, if it's even possible or viable to compare that to, say, the language that another animal might use to warn of a predator coming or things like that. Mm-hmm. Can we compare the languages?
A symbolic system that is flexible like our language, I don't think we have found that. Now, that doesn't mean that animals don't have communication, and sometimes very complex communication. So, for example, chimpanzees and bonobos, they have facial expressions very similar to our facial expressions. They have hand gestures. And so the natural communication system of the animals is actually where we should be looking, I think, rather than trying to impose our communication, which is language, on them and see how far they get. I think it would be much, much more productive to look at what they can do naturally.
So what about, say, the language of prairie dogs, which, you know, this is a very simple animal, and I imagine most people don't think of prairie dogs as being particularly intelligent as compared to a dolphin, and yet their language is extremely specific.
Yeah, well, we usually wouldn't call it language. That's a sort of colloquialism, so we call it usually communication. And they have what we call referential communication, just like some monkeys do, where they have specific calls for specific predators. So they don't only communicate to each other, watch out, there's danger, but they also tell you what danger is out there. So it is actually quite complex. And we're discovering all these things in the last 25 years. We're discovering so many new things that we did not know about animals. And my book is partly about how it came about that we are discovering all these things now. And I think it is because in the previous century, we have simplified animals far too much. We tested them mostly in little boxes, you know, the so-called Skinner boxes for rats and pigeons. So we worked with small-brained animals in small boxes. And it is much more productive to set up complex experiments where they can show their full-blown potential. And that's what we're doing at the moment.
It also feels as though one of the things that has had to happen in order to move this research forward is for us our scientists to let go of sort of arrogant assumptions. And that brings me to the chimp Ayumu, to look at a chimp that is capable of much more than we are and think, well, maybe he is smarter if we're using a different scale.
Yeah. So Ayumu can tap numbers on a touchscreen. But the trick is, of course, the interesting part is that the numbers disappear within a few milliseconds. So you get barely, if you as a human look at the screen, you barely see the numbers and they disappear. And he has to tap the locations where the numbers used to be in the right order. And he does that. So he has a sort of flash memory that is better than human memory. As soon as this was found, people got very upset that this chimp was better than humans. And so some American scientists, they went into training to see if they could beat the chimpanzee. And they actually, they got quite far, but not far enough. And Ayumu keeps beating everyone. And I don't know why people are so upset about it, because that relates, of course, to the idea that we need to be on top with everything, every capacity. But there are so many capacities in the animal kingdom that we don't relate to at all. So, for example, a bat can catch prey in the dark, which it does with echolocation. We cannot do that. It takes an enormous amount of brain power to do this, to calculate the path of the prey and your own speed. And it's a very complex task, but we usually don't look at it because it doesn't relate to anything that we do. And so we think, well, that's probably an instinct or something. We try to downplay what the bat is doing, which is really remarkable.
So we have about a minute left. Can we answer, or can you answer the title of your book, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are?
Well, I'm an optimist. I think we are smart enough for the task, and we are working very hard on it. But of course, the answer is that in the previous century, we didn't show that kind of intelligence. We tested animals in very simplistic ways, and we had very simplistic views about how they were instinctive or simple learners. We didn't really appreciate the intelligence of animals.
So the answer has been no, we weren't smart enough, but it's possible that we are.
Yeah, the new generation, I think, is, yeah.
Frans de Waal is the director of the Living Links Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center. He also teaches at Emory University. His new book is called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? And I guess the answer is maybe. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Okay, thank you.